Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode. I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind, but there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. One summer day in Jacksonville, Florida, Karen got the surprise of her life. She was with her friend Cheryl. They were pulled over on the interstate, I-95, and Karen was holding a blanket to her face. She was bleeding, and she didn't even know what had happened. In short time, she learned from a police officer that she had been shot. And she wasn't the only one. 9 cars that afternoon on that section of I-95 had been hit by bullets from an unknown source. 6 people were injured. And the manhunt was on for the shooter, a 16-year-old boy who was eventually caught and arrested. Karen and I talked about what happened that day, what it feels like to be shot in the face, and the lucky break she caught when she was taken to the ER. And at the end of the conversation, Karen gives a scoop on her area of expertise, which is angel investing and the compassionate capitalist movement. As always, I'll have links to everything we talked about in the show notes for this episode, which is at whatwasthatlike.com/33. And if you'd like to join the others who support this podcast for as little as $1 a month, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And can I just say this? I mean, it's just you and me here, right? You're probably driving or maybe out for a walk. And what are you doing right now? You're listening to me. Of course, the real attraction here are the guests I have on and hearing their unbelievable stories. I don't have any stories like that. Well, maybe one that comes to mind. But what I want to tell you is this. I appreciate that you're listening to my podcast. Out of all the 700,000 podcasts that are out there right now, you're listening to this one. That means a lot, and I thank you. And now, here's my conversation with Karen. On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you to get shot that day?
Well, I would say probably a 10. You don't, you think you're going to work and, you know, all that stuff, coming back from a weekend, and all of a sudden your life is in a completely different
place.
Yeah,
I can't imagine such a, instantaneous turnaround and things. Wow, it's just amazing how that happened. Let's talk about, give us a little background on what led up to this. You were in Jacksonville, Florida, right?
Right. It was the summer between my graduating from college and before I was going off to grad school. And I was working and having a lot of fun and had gone away for the weekend. It was in June. And so when I was in college, previously, there had been a group of friends that I had hung out with. I had been part of a group of rugby guys that were my neighbors in my dorm, and ended up doing a lot of road trips and, fun stuff with them. And they were like a bunch of big brothers to me. And turned out that particular weekend, a group of them that had already graduated were the year before us were getting married. It was John and Cindy John had been one of my neighbors, and Cindy had been his long-term girlfriend, and we were going up to New Jersey for our wedding, and all of us were convening almost like a small reunion, because I hadn't seen a lot of them in a year since they had graduated, and then I had just graduated. And so we were up there having a good old time that weekend, and there was some updates in my personal life. A guy that had been a good friend of mine during that whole time, that year after they had graduated, had become a romantic interest. So there was all kinds of new news for when I got back in to the airport back in Jacksonville, returning from that trip.
And you lived in Jacksonville, right? Right. Beach?
Yeah, Jacksonville Beach. I lived with my mom down there during the summer.
Okay. And how old were you then?
I was 21.
Okay. You said you had just graduated college.
Right. I just graduated from Emory University and was getting to go to MBA school down at University of Florida, starting up in August. So this was like right smack in the middle. And it was a month before my birthday. My birthday's on July 2nd. So
you flew back into Jacksonville. And what, take us from that time, what happened that day?
So my best friend, who also knew all of these people because she used to road trip up from FSU, and she also hung around with the rugby team down at FSU. And so we would get together at these tournaments together. And so she knew all these guys. And the guy that I had started seeing, the three of us had done a bunch right at my graduation, as part of my graduation. So we had a whole history and things like that. So, of course, when she picked me up from the airport, I had all this new news to tell her, because this was all kind of breaking news, so to speak, of this stuff happening. And we ran into a friend of ours, because you have to think about it. Back in 1985, there weren't any cell phones. There wasn't any social media. And at the time, so this guy that I had met on a spring break and had done this excursion in a sailboat excursion, the spring break my senior year, we bumped into him because he had come down from Atlanta to catch a plane from Jacksonville to Newark, because it was cheaper at that time to fly from Jacksonville to Newark than from Atlanta to Newark. And so I was surprised. If you come out the gate back then, you could go up to the gates. We didn't have the security we have now. So this guy Mike was there. And so Cheryl and I hung out with him and just kind of catching up. And then when we got in the car to head home, I head back down to the beach from the airport. It's about a 30 to 40 minute drive. We're out on I-95, which is one of the little roads that you go from the airport to get down to our main drag going into the beach, which is 10. So we're driving and I'm thirsty. And I, these are all kind of like these, this weird stuff leading up to it. When you think about what is a, that moment where, you know, all things could have changed, you know, had we not stopped and hung out with Mike, had we not, I leaned forward to get, she had an old soda in her cup holder and she said, no, it's hot. You don't want that. And I said, okay, fine. So I leaned back and then all of a sudden the glass shatters. It's really hot outside. It's probably 100 degrees or something. And I felt like I'd got, I played basketball in high school and I played on intramurals on the, at Emory on basketball. And so it felt like I'd gotten hit in the face with a basketball because I'd missed plenty of passes in my day and gotten hit in the face with a basketball. But this time, all of a sudden I'm pouring blood out of my face. I see this almost like a spigot coming down from my nose as I'm looking down. I'm like, why am I spigot of blood coming out of my face? And I yelled to Cheryl, you know, of course she heard the glass shatter.
Now Cheryl was driving, right? You were in the passenger seat.
Yeah, that's right. And she's taller than me. So she was back, you know, I was up further. So I was probably, you know, a few inches ahead of her in the seat. So, you know, I said, Cheryl, pull over. I'm bleeding. And she's like, oh my God. And she pulls over and gets on the side of the road. She, her parents were in the police force, were public safety. Her mom was a dispatcher and her dad was a sheriff and her stepdad, I might get this, was a detective, one or the other, you know? And so she was, you know, she was well equipped to what to do in an emergency situation. So she got me out of the car, laid me down on the side of the road. I saw these other cars pulled over up ahead. And
this was on the, this was on the interstate, right? This is
I-95. I-95 between, you know, downtown Jacksonville and the airport and the beaches. And so she pulled out a blanket out of the car. It was a blanket that she laid her dog. She had a German Shepherd that was like an old detective, you know, police dog that had been put to retirement. And so she had this dog that she normally had. So this was his blanket, but it was all she had. And we were in an emergency. So we weren't caring that there was dog hair on it or anything like that. So she gives it to me, says, hold your nose. And so I'm holding my nose, just thinking I got cut with glass or something like that. And then,
because at this point you really had no idea what had happened, right?
No, I had no idea. I wasn't in any pain and we weren't looking around to see what had happened on the other side. So we had no idea like what had happened on her side of the car. It was just sort of my side. The window is shattered and I'm bleeding and I'm on the side of the road and she runs up the thing. I got this blanket over. I can't see anything. And she comes back and she's hyperventilating, crying, and I can't hardly hear. She can't make words. And I'm like, Cheryl, stop. You're freaking me out. I don't think it's that bad. And she's trying to get her words out. And then the next thing I hear is a police officer's voice, and he says, we have a child with lacerations from glass and a woman who's been shot through the nose. And I was like, oh my God, I've been shot through the nose. That's me. I've been shot through the nose. I can't believe I've been shot through the nose. And all these thoughts are going through my head. Like, okay, I had a dream of someday I was going to be on Johnny Carson. Now I could never be on Johnny Carson because I've got this mangled face. Unless I'm going to be on Johnny Carson because I got the mangled face. It's like, you know, all this stuff. I'm thinking, you know, what? Oh my God, I have no nose. Oh, you know, all of that. And so, but I still, again, I'm not in pain. And so next thing, you know, I'm just like, you know, kind of babbling, whatever. And probably, I don't know how long, man, it had been 15 minutes or something. I don't really recall the time frame. It didn't seem like it was that long. There's an emergency vehicle there. I'm getting put into the back of the emergency vehicle. They say, what hospital do you want to go to? I don't even really remember, but I was whatever I could think of at the time, Memorial Hospital or something like that. And so we go to the Memorial Hospital. I don't even know how fast, why those guys got there so fast. You know, I had no idea what was happening.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%. So I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me, and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25WHAT.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
So I get to the hospital, into the emergency room. I think Cheryl got to a phone and called my mom. So I was really fortunate because on call that day, the doctor that was on call was a plastic surgeon. So they had a plastic surgeon on call. You know, they are in their emergency room when I got in. And this, you know, this happened during daylight hours. It was probably like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon when it had happened. And so, you know, my mom got there and it was, you know, I was blessed in so many ways. One, when I went forward at the time that I went forward, seconds later would have gone through my head, you know, and, I was blessed that this doctor was on call. And, you know, I never had any other surgery other than he said that if anybody was ever going to get shot and have the least amount of damage to them, because, you know, usually bullet holes will leave an indentation if it's in your shoulder or something like that, you know, was I got shot in a part of my nose that didn't really do any damage. I don't have a deviated septum. I have a little bit of, you know, kind of an ongoing allergy thing all the time, but I don't have major damage to my nose. It's just like people, you know, it looks like who knows, I've just got this a little bit. It basically took the flap of skin and put it back over and sewed it together and connected some of the membranes that were up inside of it to restore it. And I've got a little bit of shrapnel on the edge of my mouth here that, you know, stays there, and a little bit of glass up in the bridge of my nose that shows up on x-rays. But, you know, from that, for the most part, that's it. And my bandage, I didn't have my head all bandaged up. You know, I just had, you know, a basic little bandage across my nose. So
do you ever have to explain the shrapnel when you're going through an x-ray at an airport?
No, it doesn't actually pick up
They don't even notice it, huh?
I used to have to explain it a lot to doctors when they go, what's these things in your nose, if they were doing any kind of a x-ray, or like, you know, when you go to the dentist, you know, it like might show up. It's the glass is kind of diminished over time, and it's, so it's not as prevalent as it was before.
Now, I'm really curious, because you, when you first found out that you were shot, it sounds like your one of your initial reactions was, now I can't go on Johnny Carson. Why would you have gone on Johnny Carson? Were you a performer or an entertainer or some type?
No, I just was, I had a dream of what I was going to be doing in the world. And, you know, I wanted to be a person that was considered an expert at the time. I was an economics major at college. I went to get my MBA. I was kind of looking at doing an MBA JD. And I wanted to be a person that advised companies, you know, travel the world, be exotic, and be this sort of expert. And, you know, you always want to be famous for something that you could, like, be on a Johnny Carson or something. You know what I mean? It's like a 21-year-old with all the future ahead of her and what might be my future. And, you know, it just wanted, I don't know, crazy thought.
Seemed like it messed that up a little bit, though.
Yeah, well, who knows? There's times that, you know, I'm a best-selling author, so who knows what's going to the future may tell.
So what actually happened? Where did this bullet come from?
The bullet, you know, came through the right window, the passenger window. It went through my nose and underneath Cheryl's chin, because she was taller and sat back and up higher, and out the other window. So there was a bullet hole in her window. And it turned out that they didn't know what was going on. It became this giant manhunt, because if you think about it, 1985, it was very rare that you had people getting shot like we have today. It was a unusual thing.
And you guys, your car wasn't the only one that was targeted either.
Right. So that's the thing. They found, actually, six people got injured from glass or shrapnel. I was the only one that actually got hit by a bullet. There was about, I think, you know, 9 to 12 vehicles that got hit. Some of them showed up, you know, down in like Daytona when they stopped to get gas and they noticed there was a bullet hole in the side of their car or stuff like that. So reports were kind of coming in. And the governor had been scheduled to come from the airport to someplace. And so they weren't sure if that was kind of part of it. So there was helicopters flying, trying to figure out what was going on. And they had detained a couple of guys that were out doing military games, you know, playing war games out in the woods, and decided it wasn't them. And so they really had no idea. You know, there was paper the next day, there was like this big article in the paper with pictures and people that had not been injured, but their cars had been hit, you know, talking about what it was like and stuff like that. And so, you know, come to find out, it was this 16-year-old kid that he got turned in by a friend when he had told a friend, because he didn't know he was hitting cars. He had, you know, apparently been tired of shooting at squirrels or whatever. He had borrowed some kid's gun. And he had, it was a .22 rifle, and he was shooting like an arcade game at cars going by and didn't know he was hitting the cars, wasn't trying to hurt anybody. And so he, when he was out of bullets, he left. He had no idea, because the cars were pulling over on the side of the road, and it wasn't until he saw it on the news that he realized it was him. And I guess he was afraid. He told a friend, and then the friend turned him in, and then he confessed. And so then there was they arrested him about a week and a half later. And then there was a whole bunch of decisions on what to charge him with, and, you know, 6 counts of aggravated assault. And then, you know, because this was fairly unusual, he didn't have any kind of real record of being a bad kid in school, you know, maybe a tussle here and there, but, you know, no real record. His mom and dad had been divorced. His mom had recently remarried. You know, so he had a blended family. So there was a little bit of feeling like the odd kid out kind of a thing, I think, maybe. And so they started out trying to charge him as an adult. They eventually, I think, settled for him to be charged under a youthful offender program with 2 counts of shooting into a vehicle and 1 count of aggravated battery. And he was sentenced to 8 years in prison with 5 years probation. He had a small, about $1,300 restitution to go to 13 people, you know, because that was kind of, I guess, you know. And then he was in a medium security with 18 to 24-year-olds. He was 17 at the time when he finally got sentenced.
Yeah, because he was 16 when it happened. And yeah, just look, it's just amazing that, I mean, kids do stupid things.
Yeah.
But this one stupid thing seems like it kind of set the tone for the rest of his life. He didn't have a record prior to this.
No.
But I did some research. His name is Julius Steve Davis. And in this, for this case, this random shooting into cars, he was sentenced to 8 years, got out after 2 years.
Right. He was released on, they had an overcrowding situation. And so good behavior ones that had, you know, got out. And then unfortunately he was caught doing a crime, like just a couple, not even a few weeks or not that long after he got out. And it was kind of stupid.
I looked up his record. A few months after he got out, he shot up a jewelry store and stole about $60,000 worth of jewelry. And so he was sentenced to 20 years for that, but again, got out early.
Oh.
Shortly after that, he held up two grocery stores at gunpoint in Jacksonville, and he was put back in prison. And then for that one, he got a life sentence, and he's still in prison today.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when he had, what I had heard when he got picked up on the second one, it was at nighttime. So I don't think there was actually people involved. You know, he might have shot through the glass to get in there, but he was driving down the road without his lights on and got pulled over because he didn't have his lights on. And they saw the jewels and the gun in the back seat or on the seat of the car. And so it was just really kind of a stupid thing. And it was really tragic because, you know, I don't know what his life was like when he got out with his family. And, you know, there's such a hard time sometimes when people get out of prison these days for them to actually get a job and be part of society where they feel like the only choice they have. They don't have any other choice to do anything other than crime. And it's kind of a tragedy of our justice system. But, you know, and unfortunately he did make those even worse choices after he'd made the first bad choice when he was a kid.
Yep. Some bad choices for sure. It was really amazing that with six different people that were injured, that no one was killed.
Yes, I know. It would have been, you know, a whole other story had any of that happened, right? I mean, I'm very, again, I thank God that I'm here today to do the things that I do and to chart the course of the life that I've led so far and, you know, not take it for granted.
And to have a story that you got shot.
Yeah.
Not many people can say that.
I'm still waiting to win the lottery. You know, nobody, everybody always says, like, I've never heard of anybody that's been shot through the nose. And I was like, well, how many people do you know that won the lottery either? So, you know, I'm still waiting for that. Or Ed McMahon to knock on my door or something like that. Or now it's, I think it's Cedric or somebody.
Yeah, I don't think Ed McMahon's knocking on too many doors these days.
Not anymore.
Well, how did this was definitely a brush with death. For you, your experience, how did that affect you? Or did it affect your outlook on life at all?
Well, you know, I had this saying that I had adopted when I was 16 called live, love, laugh. You know, it's very common nowadays. And so it was sort of my, you know, live life fully, love freely, laugh spontaneously, right? And so it had been part of sort of my makeup of my approach and viewpoint on life. And then when this happened, June 2nd became my life day. So I always try to plan something special with friends, or sometimes I'm just feeling quiet, and I'll, you know, celebrate my life day. So June 2nd's an important day for me. And I, you know, at the time, you know, I had sort of big dreams. I didn't know, you know, what that meant and where it would go and where my life would go. But it was always something that I felt like I had to find my purpose in life. And I never really felt afraid of driving or this kind of random thing would happen again, or I never brought any of that with me because I felt spared. You know what I mean? If something bad was going to happen, that was the time for something bad to happen, you know? So I felt like I was going to be foolish and go off and, you know, jump off cliffs and things like that. Although, you know, I have done plenty of foolish things, but I felt like there's going to be something. And so by the time I got to having, you know, starting a family, you know, I was just kind of living a normal life, working the corporate gig, happily married, had a, we'd been married about 10 years when our daughter came along. And I remember telling a friend when I was telling the story, and I'd left IBM and I was kind of starting my business, and, you know, I wasn't really sure if that was going to be, you know, when I left IBM and my life took a turn, I remember telling my friend, I said, well, you know, I don't know, you know, I always felt like, so maybe my special purpose is that being the mother of this child, and I didn't have any other children. I wanted other children, but it just didn't happen. Being the mother of my child, maybe she's going to go on and do something, you know, because I always, one of my favorite Christmas movies is It's a Wonderful Life. And, you know, part of the story of that is he thinks that he had no value in his life when his business all falls apart. And he's like, everybody would have been better without me and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the angel comes down and tries to teach him what life would have been like without him. And, you know, there's all these changes, right? And then he says, I did have a wonderful life. I did have a wonderful life, you know? And so it's, and so, you know, you wonder about that. You touch, you know, the thin threads of the people that you've touched in your life. And maybe that's a reason why, you know, I'm still here, because there's something that I'm having an influence on somebody else, or, you know, my daughter or whatever. And then, as I kind of went forward in life, the recession hit my business hard, and I had had this big expectation of what was going to happen. I had taken over this angel group. I'd built it up really big, running these, doing these angel investor events, helping companies raise capital, learn how to raise capital, doing all these things. I thought we were going to make it a whole national deal. We were going to have chapters all over the country, and I was going to do this thing called our funding planet that was going to be this way, you know, now it's all over the place. But at that time, there wasn't a LinkedIn. LinkedIn was like the only social media that was out there at the time. And it was going to be a way for entrepreneurs and investors to connect up. Now you see all these crowdfunding platforms. So, but this was going to be a kind of a platform, our funding platform, our funding planet. And it was this vision for what it was, but you didn't have template for doing this stuff. So it was, you know, heavy lifting to get this thing done. And then the recession hit and everything just kind of fell apart. I learned a lot of lessons about, you know, the direction my business was going at the time and things that I should have done different. And it was, you know, a life lesson, but the people that worked for me got laid off and I became a solopreneur again and, you know, was dealing with a lot of discouragement about setting these big dreams and this big expectation of where my life was going to go and the impact I was going to have. And I was coming up on my 50th birthday and my dad had passed. And when he had a hospice situation at his house. And so I was out there to look at his, to you know, kind of be there during that process. And I started going through all of his memorabilia to create what we were going to use for the funeral. And I discovered that because my dad had not been a big part of my life during my teens, and I really only got to know him as kind of an adult. And so I discovered that all these things that I had known about him, he was an inventor. He invented the first screen printer to be able to do 5 colors on a t-shirt. He had been part of the aeronautical engineering team at Hughes Aircraft when they built the first satellite that went around the Earth. And so he had been an engineer and had been a part of this and been an inventor and always had these big entrepreneur aspirations. And his screen printing business had become a manufacturing business, and he was manufacturing the screen printing equipment. And so I had looked at all of what he had done, and I realized that he hadn't even started that business till he was 50 years old. And so I was like, wow, you know, here I'm thinking, I don't know what's going to happen in my life because now I'm turning 50 and I had this business that didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out. And I was like, wait a second, I'm turning 50. My dad just started his business when he was 50. So what am I doing? I needed to get rid of that stinking thinking. And so I dug back into Think and Grow Rich and, you know, started to reevaluate how to turn things around and what to do next. And my mom had been, you know, a huge encourager and supporter during all of that years of, and during that whole time. And when I was in school and supporting me during school and everything. And so, you know, between the two of them, her steadfast and then his inspiration of where he had gone, you know, I had a good basis to build upon when I decided to dust myself off, pick myself up and spin myself around and get on the road again.
That's interesting that he, at the end of his life, inspired you to kind of open the next chapter in yours.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. Tell us about your business now. What do you do today? I know it's Compassionate Capitalist, but what does that mean?
Yeah, so I had read this book way back when by Rich DeVos, and it was called Compassionate Capitalism. And his process and his thing as a...
He's one of the guys that started Amway, right?
Right. And so you help other people learn how to have a business, and through his business, Amway, it was to, you know, give people a hand up, not a hand out. And if you help people become successful, then they can turn around and help other people be successful. And when they make money, then they spend money, and that, you know, helps the economy and all that kind of stuff. And so it was a bottoms up, not a trickle down. And so I kind of took that and I modified it to be what I believed angel investing was, right? Because my last job at IBM had been I was a complex opportunity business manager, and my nickname was the deal maker. And I'd work with companies that had innovation that they needed to bring to the marketplace, and they needed to get money. So IBM would be on a team that would put together their plan and endorse them, so to speak, so they could go out and get venture capital money and then come back and spend it with IBM. And so that was a lot, and I was around a lot of this innovation. And so part of why I had left was to go help this one company do all of that. And I discovered angel investing. It was like brand new to me. I was like, it made sense, but I had no idea there were individuals that were writing checks out of their checking account. And so the reasons why they would invest in a startup company was because that they believed in the innovation that this inventor or this founder or this process or this idea for a business, or they believed in that entrepreneur.
And because it's a new thing and it's a high risk, a bank is not going to lend money to somebody like that.
Banks don't live in money. They you know, startups get their money out of their credit cards, or, you know, a lot of times, particularly if they're a high growth company, it's this group of angels that will give them the money. On average, it's between $10,000 or $25,000. Somebody will stroke a check. And that was my definition of compassionate capitalism. Somebody that invests time, money, knowledge, resources into an entrepreneur endeavor to bring innovation to the market, create jobs, and create wealth for all those involved. And when the economy was tanking because of the recession, I said, you know, I'm going to take my podcast show. I had been doing these giant events with multiple companies pitching and hundreds of investors attending. It was called the Southeast Private Equity Conference. We called it the Spec. And so my radio show was called the Spec Radio Show. And I would interview people on the show and industry people and all this kind of stuff. And I changed it to the Compassionate Capitalist Show. And I wanted to take, because a lot of angel investors I knew took their money out of the banks and they had it sitting on the sidelines. And, you know, and I wanted them to put it to work in entrepreneurs, because the best way to turn our economy around was to get these entrepreneurs going with where the new jobs were going to be, where the innovation was going to be. And the big companies that struggle with innovation sometimes because they're a bureaucracy, they buy these companies. That's how they get the innovation. There's a whole food chain of how that happens. Most companies don't go public. Most companies get bought at some point when they get to a certain size. And so, you know, that was really what I wanted to compel people to. And so that was what I was, you know, when my dad passed, I was just in the start of that. And I said to myself, I keep talking about doing this compassionate capitalist movement, and I keep thinking, oh, it's too big for me. Oh, it's, you know, who am I to think I could do this? I couldn't even do this other thing. So who am I to think I could do this? And then I said, I was shot through the nose, and here I am. If I could be the person they should, maybe this is it. I have to start the compassionate capitalist movement. If not me, then who? And so that's where it became my life mission, my business endeavor. My podcast now is my megaphone for those ideas and those concepts. When the Jobs Act came about in 2012, it was what we knew, people in the industry knew, was the biggest barrier between entrepreneurs raising capital was being able to get access to capital outside of these tightly knit angel groups. And so this was to remove the barrier to that and kind of upgrade the capital raising process to the 20th century because of the internet and how we communicate and things like that. So I knew, and the other side of the coin, though, is that by them opening up this door for to get access to other capital, and crowdfunding was all the rage, they'd really, the Congress, because of people lobbying them, had figured out that some of the things that we totally take for granted now, 3D printers, drones, the little Fitbit watches, all the smart watches that connect to our phones, that technology, a lot of the VR and AR virtual reality and augmented reality headsets and goggles, even the little spinner thing that you, that the widgets, the little, you know, that people, you know, fidget widgets that people do, all of that stuff came to market because people did crowdfunding that was reward-based. They bought products in advance. And so when those companies became big multi-million dollar companies and got bought or got big venture capital money and went on and did other things, all those people that had put millions of dollars in didn't reap any benefits from that. And so part of the changes of the Jobs Act was said, not only can entrepreneurs do this way, but the other way is that all these people that lost a lot of their retirement because of the collapse of the stock market and the collapse of the real estate market, which now is only a decade later, just kind of getting back to zero to the, where it was. They had an opportunity to participate in these younger companies, the great economic democratization of the capital markets. They could participate at small levels in these companies and maybe take a $500 investment and it became a $1,000 investment. Or like a way a $20,000 of an angel might become $200,000, a $500 investment might become $5,000. And they could do lots of little bits of this the same way and participate in the American dream. Even if they couldn't run a business or start a business, they could participate in that way. And that was the purpose of my book, was to teach people how to be able to do that with confidence when they're stroking checks out of their own checking account. Inside Secrets to Angel Investing is a way for people to become compassionate capitalists and share in the American dream. And so that's my mission. And that's, you know, where I'm going. That's what I do.
And that's what you're doing. So what's your website? What's the name of your book? And how can people get in touch with you if they want to?
So my book is Inside Secrets to Angel Investing. The long title is Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, Step-by-Step Strategies to Leverage Private Equity Investment for Passive Wealth Creation. But if you just look for Inside Secrets to Angel Investing or my name, Karen Rands, R-A-N-D-S with the S on the end, on Amazon, you can get the book or you can order it at whatever bookstores you go to, but it's not on the shelves. You have to order it. And on my website is really simple. It's just karenrands.co, Karen Rands, KarenRands.co. And on there is, if you do Inside Secrets to Angel Investing.com, it'll take you straight to a tab on that page. You can go and kind of check out chapters of it. There's 44 Inside Secrets in the book, and I have an excerpt of 12 of them that I have available on that page that you can go and check it out. And so that's the best way to reach me, the contact page. You can, if you're an entrepreneur or you're an investor or you want to get in, I do a what I call a compassionate capitalist coffee break. It's an email series of snippets of videos and stuff that are tips and techniques for building successful companies. What I talk about on my show, the Compassionate Capitalist Podcast Show, is, you know, things to make successful businesses. And I try to pull into it why an investor cares and why an entrepreneur cares. And we cover topics that I interview a lot of angel investors and people that have written other books that are successful about, you know, building businesses or setting a business up to sell it. My next book that's going to be coming out is going to be how to scale a business to get it, you know, beyond startup to that next stage so you can set it up for selling and raising capital for that.
You're on a mission.
I am.
I'm going to have all the links to everything that we've talked about, your podcast, your book, your website, everything. They'll all be on the links or they'll all be in the episode notes for this show. And so people can go there. And hey, I'm glad that you survived being shot and that you're able to be here today for this conversation.
Oh, thank you, Scott. It's like I haven't really gone public with this much. I remember the first time I was back up in Atlanta after I graduated from grad school and I'm at a party and we're sitting around and somebody had like an aha moment. They go, wait a second. I remember you were the girl that got shot through the nose. And they were like, what was that like? And I just kind of moved on with life and it was something I did with my life day. But I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. And so you take it for granted because I have friends that I've now known for 20, you know, even here where I live now. And 10 years and it'll come up sometimes and people that I've known for a while, they're like, wait a second, you got shot, you know? Oh, and then one thing I have to add to it, because it'll come up and I'll say, oh, I have a Purple Heart. And they're like, how'd you get a Purple Heart? So that summer when I was, my job was working at this bar that tended to the guys in the military base that was down the street. Jack's Liquors had a bar. And so I was, my clientele were all mostly Navy guys. And they, when I got shot, you know, I'd missed work that day. And my boss was like, yeah, right. And then she saw the news. And so when I came back in and I was on the door checking IDs for a while, and I had my bandage across my nose, and some guy that had been there, like, was a regular, got very much older, and he had two Purple Hearts, and he gave me one of them, and it was really extremely special. So I still have it, and I look at it and cherish it as, you know, as a memento that, you know, of the experience.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool gift. Karen, thanks for sharing your story with us. It's very interesting, and we'll look forward to seeing where your compassionate capitalist movement takes you.
Thank you very much, Scott. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share this personal part, but something that is important, because everybody has a purpose in their life, and hopefully they don't have to get shot to find it.
Thanks for listening. My goal for each episode is to bring you people and stories that you just won't find on other podcasts. If you'd like to discuss this episode or previous episodes with other listeners, you can do that at our private Facebook group at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. I hope to see you in there. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And I'll see you in 2 weeks, where we'll once again be asking the question, what was that like?